Blog Talk Radio.
Masonic effect. Interesting week. Let's do a quick summary. Anything shocking out there? Yes, it's really interesting. If we think that what we focus on, what grabs our attention day by day, has such a such an effect on us. It's striking, really, it really is. When we were boys, it didn't seem like we had to be that concerned. We now know that there were sort of shady things going on about gaining our attention. We know big pharma and tobacco industry took advantage of that. Didn't want to. I thought having a cigarette was, I don't know if it was a sign of a growing up, but I just thought it made perfect sense. And besides, I like that our cars became equipped with ashtrays and even those little push-in lighters. It was who questioned such things? Well, thank goodness we did. Thank goodness we had the science to tackle these very, very powerful interests. And they were coming after our taking advantage of our focus. And still are. This is nothing new. This was going on in the time of our great grandparents, who became subjected to that kind of manipulation way back. But we became more aware, and we strengthen our resolve by discovering that we're much better off being informed. That the world is we can live in idyllic comforts, and relatively so where I am, knowing full well that this kind of lifestyle we can say everybody deserves this kind of lifestyle, but that's a bit simplistic and a bit wishful thinking. This kind of lifestyle consumes resources and energy and all kinds of things, and we need to know that. We can accept as we grow older that the world is safe when men share values, men and women. I mean that in the mankind in the older sense before it became gender specific. We share values, and we share an environment, and we share responsibilities. The jungle that we live in. Well, I know some people shutter their windows and as they get older and hide away or live that lifestyle, anxious because particularly when they become aware that there's risks. Well, some of us, like you and I, understand that there are risks, and the way to mitigate those risks is by, dare I say, education. From the time we see the dad hanging on to that little hand at the red light, just because this little person isn't aware. When we're born into the world, we are born with a sense of, I don't think there's even a sense of grace, because there's no crime being committed, nothing wrongful until, adults get into the mix. We teach the risk. We stop here and we look at that light, and that tells us that's a symbol that tells us information. But somebody needs to translate that to a little person, because they don't know. Oh, I'm not talking about the lout that treats the loutish parents that treat the child like they're just stupid versions of adults, that they need constant reminding. I'm talking about you and I that are there, because we know that the better we are as teachers, the more our child is going to be able to grasp the essence of living, what it's like to live. The jungle is and always has been dangerous, and we didn't become the apex critter by throwing our hands in the air and running around saying, "Oh, woe is me." We learned what those dangers were, and then we passed that information on to each other. And all of a sudden, those big scary things became more manageable and became our next dinner. The risk didn't change. Risk was still there, and we still teach it. There's risk out there, but our jungles are changing. Now we have this whole, urban jungle kind of phenomena. And it doesn't mean that humanity is any less than it ever was. It's just complicated in a way to understand that every one of these risks has a source, has a trigger, and some of it is really hard to understand, but that doesn't stop us from safeguarding ourselves and our little people and our next generations and our neighbors by talking about the risks and identifying them and sharing that risk. But we have competing interests. We know that our need for safety and security can easily be ignored by multinationals. And that's a word I never I try to remember what grade I was when I learned that word. It was a while ago. We want to be. That's the advantage of being aware. I've come from a part of the world where the presence of lawyers wasn't. It's not anything about the person, the people. They're wonderful people, but their presence wasn't needed. It's like where law abiding. Where men understood their responsibilities. That was, you may mock that, but that was the values on the island where I was born. And I believe, as far as I can tell, it still is. And these are places where people go at night and go sleep at night without locking their doors, or go away without locking their doors. Because they can. And we know that there are other creatures out there that have never experienced that, and they're taught to look for any opportunity to exploit. So we have our sons and daughters in uniform to guard against that, and to show, at least teach, that there are consequences. The risk, we don't. Once that's learned, the child, can go up to that intersection, look at the light, and look at the traffic around it, and make their own decisions, their own safety, take their safety into their own hands. And that's what we want. That's how we pass on the knowledge, the things that are going to be useful every second of every day. Don't we lose track of that sometimes, the significance of the effect that we have on people around us? And I know masonry doesn't really ignore that either. The effect that we have on people around, well, we start with this notion of practicing certain ways and behaviors around each other. And you and I know that can be a struggle. Now, we also know that there are some lodges that where those the expectations are preserved, that the last thing you do is raise your voice and be aggressive. And yet think of it as an observation. How that happens here, that we don't see that kind of behavior. Well, that's reflection and age and our values. And I don't know if the word, tell me here, is the word tolerance or understanding. I don't know how much I have to tolerate the differences in your thinking and mine. I don't really think that that's a word that fits. It's an apt description. It's not tolerating, and that makes it sound like, it's something quite unpleasant. I think it's more acceptable, if you don't mind, saying it's simply an acknowledgement. We are, of course, we're different, and of course our values are different, and of course our opinions have to vary, and necessarily, if we find ourselves wondering about agency, but that level of determination. It's fair for you to say, well, what difference does it make, man? What difference does it make? What do we tolerate? Well, we not only tolerate, gentlemen, people. We not only tolerate. We're Freemasons. We're taught to influence. We're taught to build on diversity. We're taught to infuse our ideas and our language with ways and techniques that make our messages acceptable to listeners, more acceptable to listeners. The way we do that is by paying very careful attention before, learning how to speak to each other, learning how to introduce ideas so that they're not a matter of randomness, they're not done rashly or to surprise people. Because when we're surprised with an idea, we do what every logical person does. We have to, in a sense, don't literally do this, but we have to pause and reflect on it and process it. And our thinking, that part of our thinking doesn't move as fast as our mouth. The idea, as ideas are shared, we're fast, but we need that nanosecond to process. And for bigger, more complex ideas, we need much more time to process. Because we need the we need that processing time, and an understanding that our mind, the mind that you and I take for granted, it's always there. That mind likes efficiency. And if you and I thought that we control everything going on inside of it, well, there's a wake up call. We're barely understanding what in the world is happening behind our eyes, let alone controlling it. But as you know, if we can keep telling ourselves we're in command, we're the apex, we're the bee's knees, then we can fool ourselves. Except with in this order, we tend to not want to be living in illusion. No, we find understanding and what's going on around us is critical. But without accurate information, without the truth, we are spinning our wheels. I won't say that we represent the heartland of morality and ethics. I won't say that. That's our direction. Are we living the values? You could ask me that question. It sounds so corny. I'd say no, hell no. It's like going into the pub with my mates and somebody ordering a dot. Zero bevy. It's like, really? Why? You know, well, and I know, you know, there is Lester who has been drying out for the past 7 years, and that's him. When we know, we understand. We're not going to jeopardize another guy's health or suggest, of course, come along and designate a driver. Yeah, but it's more than that. He's a mate. And whatever he likes, it's perfectly fine. He likes a cup of tea, by all means. It's the crack, isn't it? So they're having a good time, the laughs, burying ourselves in those conversations. Just you know that it's right, the compatibility that forms. We like that, and we experience it all the time. Now, I'm not somebody that. Let me just pull up take a deep breath and say it out loud. We're not elements of a change in the world. We are bystanders. We are witness to what's going on around us. I don't use my judgment as the standard for a living, my Lord. And I'm certainly in no position to impose my standard on anybody else. I expect everybody has his own standard. Now, I might question, and I do, why would you go to an organization with this kind of heritage, kind of focus, if you weren't serious about participating? It's like, why would you go on a fishing trip if you hated boats and water and fishing? Or why would you go to a baseball game if you hated big crowds? Well, just don't go, right? That's what I would think. But I know people want that. There are people that perfectly understand the reputation that's been accumulated. It's very, very interesting. And over the years, we've been teaching people that if you rub shoulders with, you become part of an organization that has in its history a list of celebrities, then it's somehow that celebrity rubs off. We've done that. We've been using that kind of messaging for even now. You know, it's not that the small work, the small effort of that you bring to the lesser effort, the you know, meaningful, heartfelt effort that you bring is any less important. But we don't talk about that. We want to talk about the politicians and the entertainers that and musicians. Everybody that in some way is more than us. And so, of course, they'll join. You put on my Sunday best, and then I'm one of you. And I won't fault that. I will say masonry's been manipulated for a long, long time. You look back at our history and see that there's been charlatans that took advantage of masonry. They profited from it. They were fleecing good men. They fleeced, and so the sense of order and some discipline about what's going on, you know, formed. It was necessary because we had all these other people actually, taking advantage. They saw advantage in what we were doing. And in our naivety and in our trust, why couldn't they just leave it alone? You know, I don't know. Somebody wants to make a quick buck. And we had all those exposés. Thank you very much. You know, 19th century stuff, 18th century stuff. I've known the secret. Now I'm going to tell the world. You couldn't keep a secret. You don't have the secret to tell. You gossip, but then today, you know, I listen to members, they gossip. Some of them are foolish enough to brag about, you know, sharing our information with non-members, even with their family members. And they brag about it as if it doesn't matter to them, so it ought not to matter. Well, our values are still what they are. But our lifestyles are, I don't know if we're changing, they're being clarified. There's things going on around us that are in the jungle that can be a risk if we're not informed. And so we take the time to inform one another. Not about, you know, the something on the shelf, you know, that you're going to buy in the store or that medication that you're going to take. We've pretty much ramped up enough, taking advantage of the paranoia out there that people aren't able to discriminate anymore and aren't able to make decisions. They're just by defaulting, saying, no, that's too complicated. I'm going to not take advantage of whatever. Yeah, that's the world we live in. We need to be, there has been, I'm going to be the one to declare it. And if you hear the lightning strike here, mea culpa, there's been a failure to preserve the moral core. There's been a failure for a lot of reasons. And I don't have a finger to point. It just is. So excuse us if masonry is still patiently going about its business in the background, talking about, bringing up the topic of morality and ethics and philosophy and not being embarrassed about it. Now, I'm inclined to think, even if I'm not a committed student, a man would have advantage listening to the conversation of the Masonic conversation. He can be a schoolboy as long as he has that moment, that pause of contemplation, that he's not, so distractible because there are things to be learned. The foolishness is I'm going to decide what those priorities are and I'm going to impose them on you when that's so disrespectful. He comes at his advantage, his life, his awareness, his own way. And I might say to you, and I might share this value, to go through life, we need to accept that it's not going to be desirable. And some people, it would be off-putting to some people. We have to accept that. Not that it's intentional, but it is also an observation. The craft has purpose. The craft in its myriad of approaches has purpose. And where... you needed this time of the day, didn't you? Where you enjoy this, that we can be sentimental. You don't have a problem with that. My goodness, it happens. If you're fortunate, we could have a sense of humor. But we bring shared values into play. And to ensure that we don't become zealous and overboard with them, we talk about them. Remember those damn hermeticists, that Trismegistus guy, you know, everything in moderation, even Mason. We talk, chat. Anyway, it's music time. Huh? Do you mind? Good show today, Living the Values, the commentary, good history. You know, everything is, it's top shelf. Pardon me if we're going to try and make this an enjoyable time together. And hello and welcome. South Africa, fabulous to have you. Filipino, friends of Masonic Effect, thank you. Nice to have you aboard. Greece, what can I say? In Britain, hello. Our brethren in Russia, welcome. What's the word? I won't butcher the language. North America, thank you. Thank you, thank you. This is the voice of a Masonic extent. You are part of that. It's global. It's not the values that we employ aren't my values or your values. We're looking at the common sense values. The common sense is like those things that apply just to everyone. And our philosophies apply. We don't say, well, it's just you, you blue-eyed little scamp. No, it's like they apply to everybody. Oh, don't yell at me. Don't. Yeah, you can be high. All right, yell at me. I've got broad shoulders. If you need a scapegoat, you know, all puffed up, go ahead. This stuff has made sense for thousands of years. Probably, well, some of it before the Greeks, but at least from their time. Let's not be too dismissive in our power. Thanks to them for bringing up some of this. But enough. Let me try some new music here. And pardon me if we get this right or wrong. Oh my goodness, it goes wrong. Shut everything off right away. Fingers crossed. Breathtaking pause. Love and Sonny Rollins. Thank you. my, we did it. We did it. Hello. That's a thing of beauty. It really is. Imagine him as a young man. You know, Manhattan, Brooklyn, on the bridge, the famous story, where he practiced, you know, from that early squawks. Can you imagine a young guy, young black kid up on the bridge, squawking away? Oh, this horrible racket turns into that. Oh. And so at night, on a hot night, can you imagine being serenaded by that? Life is good. Life is good. There's people with that kind of talent and inspiration. Okay. Living the values. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Talking about values, huh? Talking about things that, you know, that don't really often are taught without them being put in that lane. These are values, little boy, and they're important that you have some. Well, okay, but right now, yeah. And how do we use those values? Well, they generally percolate through our thinking, and can we change those? Can we change our values? Yeah. Well. Not so much change, but add to them. What matters with values and how we apply them is context. Like, no, you don't have to be a genius about that. Eh? The context matters tremendously. What fits it's in? That's why we employ rhetoric and ethics, you know, to teach us, keep us out of the woods. Here. Let me try this with you. Give me your opinion. As we go about our business, each one of us interprets the challenge presented to us in lodges, trying to find a moving balance point. Where is that moving balance point? In this article, I want to examine this process to see if this is close to our expectations or our intentions. I've been explaining how influences have impacted masonry for a long time, to provide context for what is coming next. I would suggest when lodges approach a values-based good life, a mark of their success is the way they communicate their respect for the process. In laboratories and meeting rooms where decisions are being made, I've always encountered a respect and gravitas. Even certain topics elicit dignity, not that the reaction would be similar. Like this, CERN, James Webb Space Telescope, fusion, Tolstoy. Words that themselves draw attention to the human condition. Most men may think masonry is completely unique, and by association, being part of that membership, they too are unique. Masonry is one of the mind maps available to mankind. Kabbalah, Tarot, astrology, numerology, our different religions will by necessity provoke strong opinion. We impose our own sense of legitimacy, but being capable of understanding, but not entirely understanding the appeal. Fortunately, masonry encourages examination, limited by individual curiosity and motivation. Some men push back on the serious questions. Others must examine them. And then we learn that there are limits. There are some questions, you know, questions have consequences, some questions that we ought to not ask. Does a man appear to demonstrate he has found happiness by understanding the link between happiness and virtue? Aristotle made that observation, and history passed it along, where eventually Freemasonry incorporated it into ritual practice. Ritual practice. agency being what it is, never allowed this to be orthodoxy. Masonry requires individual understanding, having drawn for us the belief that logic and reasoning will eventually bring all of us to validate the design of our practices. That's the ideal. Meanwhile, while we are students, we begin to assume certain mannerisms that show us to be that way inclined. Maybe it's that pause. Maybe it's the ability to listen instead of the typical reaction and judgment and mockery, you know. Maybe it is. Living the values, we enhance them. We enhance them, but I'm not sure that we can, that we are the source of the radical change that we espouse in Masonry. We're going to make you, you know, a better man. I think that comes from the inner man, myself. I think we can make it safe. We can instruct him and mentor him as we should, as we feel obligated and as we're able, but not at the loss of our respect for his integrity and his agency. He moves at his pace, at his stride. He works with the ideas the same as you and I, and assimilates them within the intimacy of his own thought. I think that's a reasonable kind of a statement, don't you? Yes. Here, let's see what we can do with a bit of John Coltrane, just to whet our appetites, eh?
Thank you.
That'll do, huh? Yeah. Nicely. Well, it's the Poetry Corner. And what better than to go back to poems inspired by epic, epic poetry. This one comes from the Odyssey, the inspiration for this. No, the poem today I'm going to share with you is The Lotus Eaters, and it's a poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson. And he's an interesting guy. He died October 6, 1892, so a while ago. Influential, yeah, I would say. And he's the quote here in Britannica. I just love the quality of the work in this site. The quote here is that he's an English poet often regarded as the chief representative of the Victorian age in poetry. And he was raised to the peerage. You know, if you've got anything going on, a little spark would make you appear. He did that in 1884, credit for the body of his work. Usual kind of clamor in his background. He's the fourth of 12 kids, born in an old Lincolnshire family, and his dad was a rector, so that would give us an idea that he had access to education and to libraries. Alfred had two brothers, Frederick and Charles, and they were sent 1815. They went to Louth Grammar School. Didn't really please the kid, as we know, and he left 5 years later. But things at home were not good. His father managed to give him a wide literary education, as we thought. But he was precocious, and before his teens, he was composing in the styles of, get this, he was composing poetry, the styles of Alexander Pope, Sir Walter Scott, and John Milton. Oh, my. Yeah. Now, we might say, well, that was gibberish, but when you become famous, all of that becomes legend. Mm-hmm. So hold on to your scraps of paper until you become a legend. But as they say, you know, writers and poets writing these histories, to his youth also belongs The Devil and the Lady, a collection of previously unpublished poems that were published posthumously in 1930, and which shows an astonishing understanding of Elizabethan dramatic verse. Lord Byron was a dominant influence on the young Tennyson. That flamboyance and that freedom, that, you know, that courage to challenge. Yeah, I can see that. But the kids were in a vicarage and or a rectory, and they had their own resources. So when people are writing about Tennyson, they always emphasize the influence of the Lincolnshire countryside, sort of like that, you know, the bard. in Scotland, the sea about his home as the quote, sand-built ridge of heaped hills that mound the sea and that a waste enormous marsh. But his dad's health went to the went for a Burton in 1824, and he began treating himself as any decent law-abiding a man would. Grab me a bottle. If I'm sick, grab me a bottle. If it's just you're hungry at breakfast, just have a bit, you know. It made everything better. Shortly after, Alfred and his brother Charles went over to join their older brother, Frederick, at Trinity College in Cambridge. Oof, yes. And he rubbed shoulders with the children of intellectuals, Henry Hallam's son, Arthur, and they became, you know, lifelong friends. And of course, as you tend to do with the university, don't you? Inclined. This is about his poem, The Lotus Eaters. Now, what's the big deal here about the Lotus Eaters? Here's the big deal about this. This is the frame of reference that we're using here. This is, get this. The Odysseus, this is a reference to the Greek. The travelers come to a land where people do nothing but eat lotus. That's the Greek word for lotus. And it's a flower so delicious that some of his men, upon tasting it, lose all desire to return to Ithaca, and long only to remain in the land of the lotus. And Odysseus must drag his men away so that they can resume their journey home. Now think of the metaphor here. Is it money? What's your lotus? What's that drags you away? Is it fame? Is it a preoccupation? Is it hoarding something? We would call it in polite company collecting or experiencing. What is it? You know, that's so delicious that we lose all desire to return to reason. Ithaca being sort of a beacon of reason. Huh? Who can say? Well, who not? I'll give you a little a leg up here on an understanding of this. This is about mariners, you know, the Odyssey, of course. The mariners are greeted by the mild-eyed, melancholy lotus eaters, whose dark faces appear pale against the rosy sunset. Sounds very beautiful. And these lotus eaters come bearing the flower and fruit of the lotus, which they offer to Odysseus' mariners. Those who eat the lotus feel as if they have fallen into a deep sleep. They sit down upon the yellow sand of the island and can hardly perceive their fellow mariners speaking to them, hearing only the music of their heartbeat in their ears. Although it has been sweet to dream of their homes in Ithaca, the lotus makes them weary of wandering, preferring to linger here. One who has eaten the lotus fruit proclaims that he will return no more. And all the mariners begin to sing about this resolution to remain in the land of the lotus eaters. Almost sounds like the intoxicants that we see people indulging today. That they choose that option of the lotus. They lose desire. They lose desire for... you know, they have the experience. Some of these old drugs have the effect that is an elation. It's like an emotional high, emotional peak, more like what most of us would, you know, normal people would assign to orgasm, that kind of thing. Oh my goodness, it's not polite, but neither is dying on the street of a drug overdose being polite. But they, like the lotus eaters, they give up desires, huh? And so best not to be beating them, best put away the nightsticks, best stop mocking them. These are people who we have in our 17th and 18th century morality, deserve what they get. except we're sitting here in the 21st century and get over ourselves. This is a problem. This is a problem. What are we losing here in Canada? 40,000 a year. This is a problem, boys and girls. Woo-hoo. So the rest of the poem, I'm not going to get into it all. It consists of 8 numbered stanzas of the music's choric song expressing their resolution. We're going to stay here, eat that lotus, be with those people. This is wonderful. And they praise the sweet and sufferific music of the land of the lotus eaters. You know, just that lingering bittersweet, that melancholy, and comparing the music to petals and dew and granite. Tired eyelids, and then that's the first stanza. So what was Tennyson? He saw this, you scamp. Let's have a pint and talk about this. Let's talk about the contributors to your thinking. And do we get into, there's so much. I just want to share it all, but there's just too much here. Try this. Courage, he said, and pointed toward the land. This mounting wave will roll us shoreward soon. In the afternoon, they came onto a land in which it seemed always afternoon. All around the coast, the languid air did swoon. Let's chew one of those lotus and see what happens, eh? Breathing like one that hath a weary dream, full-faced above the valley stood the moon. And down and like a downward smoke, the slender stream along the cliff to fall and pause and fall did seem. A land of streams, some with a downward smoke, slowly dropping veils of thinnest lawn, did go. And some, though wavering lights and shadows broke, rolling a slumbrous sheet of foam below. They saw the gleaming river seaward flow from the inner land, far off, 3 mountaintops, 3 silent pinnacles of aged snow. Stood sunset flushed and dewed with showery drops upon the shadowy pine above the woven copse. The charmed sunset lingered low down in the red west. Through mountain clefts, the dale, which seen far inland and the yellow down bordered with palms and with a winding vale and meadow set with slender galingale, a land where all things always seemed the same. And round about the keel with faces pale, dark faces pale against that rosy flame, the mild-eyed, melancholy lotus eaters came. Branches they bore of that enchanted stem laden with fruit and flower, and therefore they gave to each who but would receive them and taste to him the gushing of the wave. Far, far away did seem to mourn and rave on alien shores, and if his fellows spake, his voice was thin as voices from the grave, and deep asleep he seemed yet all awake. And music in his ears his beating heart did make. They sat them down upon the yellow sand between the sun and moon upon the shore. And sweet it was to dream of fatherland, of child, of wife, of slave. And evermore more weary seemed the sea, weary the oar, weary the wandering fields of barren foam. And then someone said, "We will return no more." And all at once they sang, "Our island home is far beyond the wave. We will no longer roam." And the chorus, oh my, 8 verses of the chorus, each better than the last. The lotus blooms below the barren peak. The lotus blows by every winding creek. All day the wind breathes low with mellower tone through every hollow cave and alley lone. Round and round the spicy downs, the yellow lotus dust is blown. We have had enough of action and of motion. We rolled to starboard, we rolled to larboard when the surge was seething free. Where the wallowing monster has spouted his foam fountains in the sea, let us swear an oath and keep it with an equal mind in the hollow lotus lands to live and lie reclined on the hills like gods together, careless of mankind. For they lie beside their nectar and the bolts are hurled far below them in the valleys, and the clouds are lightly curled around their golden houses, girdled with a gleaming world, where they smile in secret, looking over wasted lands, blight and famine, plague and earthquake, roaring depths and fiery sands, clanging fights and flaming towns and sinking boats and praying hands. But they smile, they find a music centered in a doleful song, steaming up a lamentation and an ancient tale of wrong, like a tale of little meaning, though the words are strong, chanted from an ill-used race of men that cleave the soil, sow the seed and reap the harvest with enduring toil, storing yearly little dues of wheat and wine and oil until they perish and they suffer. Some just whispered down in hell suffer endless anguish. Others in Elysian valleys dwell, resting weary limbs on last at beds of asphodel. Surely, surely slumber is more sweet than toil. The shore that than labor on the deep blue ocean, wind and wave and oar. Oh, rest ye, brother mariner. We will not wander more. Have we found that? Is it opium we're talking about? Is it the intoxication? Is it the fragrance in the air, the beauty of the island people? Is it the difference? Is it just that pause when we step back from the rat race and say, what in the hell were we thinking? Or even something more. Or even something more. It's just, how do we do this? Thank you. Not bad, huh? Not bad. Life's good for us. Beautiful music. Interesting conversation with interesting people. And share ideas. Let's take a look at a part of our history. Over in Strasbourg. Something that was detailed. Enough detail that it gives us a sense of what was going on, more than the usual history, you know, the history that is written by victors, you know, that kind of bias. This is different. This is an effort by secretaries being detailed. Don't you wish they all could be? Here, we picked this up about the Strasbourgian versions of things, you know, the took ideas, Masonic ideas that came out of Britain, we are told, probably also came out of France and probably also came out of Germany, the German princes, the principalities, which wouldn't have been formed into a country yet, I don't think. Now, here, life goes on, and we might think that everything is nice and uniform, and there's a plasticity to it all, that we would wrinkle our nose if there's any exploration of sort of impolite topics. we don't find that in real life here. Real life people are curious, and some aren't. Some are have their head in the clouds, and some have their gaze at their boots. We're talking here about something mystical that was discovered. Same as here, by the way. Wherever you are, there is. It's happening. It raises the question, why are people that are inclined to study the sort of the impolite arts and sciences, you know, all that, I think it was Christianity that formed the notion of pagans and, you know, like it did with devils and stuff like that. Anyway, the mystical, And it was called the Harmonious Society of Reunited Friends. Hmm. And it was founded in the 1870s. And it was a blend of medical and mesmerists. Hmm. The hypnotists, I think. Yeah. Through medicine and magic in the form of animal magnetism, it sought the transformation of the human condition. Now it's got our attention. These were the followers of Franz Anton Mesmer, the Viennese doctor who traveled in aristocratic circles in Central and Western Europe during the 1870s and claimed to possess the power through electricity to heal and cure. Not only was the aristocratic lodge Le Candeur well represented in both the philanthropic and the mesmerist society, so too were lodges whose membership included doctors and men of the liberal professions. Women had also found a place in these societies. There, as they say in their correspondence to the societies, a woman could express her zeal for the utmost happiness of humanity. Sounds a little stilted. The ambience in both societies, as we shall see, was simultaneously rationalist and theosophic. The light that shone on their midst cast its rays into realms strange as well as familiar to students of the European Enlightenment. Rather than separating these impulses into enlightened and antithesis, romantic, I shall see them as complementary and profoundly social as well as civic. Rather than arguing for these impulses as simply representing the end of the Enlightenment, let's consider them inextricably bound up with its civic culture created by the mores of elite civility and sociability. The mystical could express concrete social and ideological postures in whatever guise, however, it was not ideologically neutral. Hence, mesmerism could be both radical and conservative in the postures it assumes toward established authority. Not least in mesmerism and Freemasonry, we have another place where women's participation in the Enlightenment could find expression. These societies admitted elite women, indeed encouraged their participation. We should remember that at this time it was still commonplace in the Alsatian Catholic churches for men and women to be segregated from each other, even in the face of protests, in one instance from the wife of a local tax farmer. The tensions within French society, which de Tocqueville noted well over a century ago, created ostensibly strange alliances and generated impulses that appear difficult to understand if only in retrospect. Thank you. Well, I see that our time together has come to an end. That's a fright. As my grandfather used to say, that's a fright. I hope we've been helpful to you and helped bring a smile to your face and entertain you, fill your mind with comforting thoughts. Find the focus. You know, I like to think that the Messianic Effect will help to set the tone, or will set the tone. There are, and I hope it comes as some comfort to you. There are always sort of things, ideas that are mystical around us. You know, I am from a culture that that reveres the mysticism. Not just the songs of Van Morrison, I do the mystic, but the little people, stories of the little people and the fairies and ghosts, and we didn't mock it. It was what it was, and old wives' tales weren't mocked because they were coming from women. They were the tales that old women passed along about us, about raising children, about health, about the important things in life, and about risk. So, what happens when you? Just as a generic question, what happens when you stop mocking? What happens when you step out of the mainstream? You become part of the fifth estate. What happens then? You know that you become part of the outlier, not to succumb to any outlandish efforts to manipulate your thinking or manipulate the money out of your wallet into my or your occultish group, but just to examine what does mysticism look like when all you're doing is checking it out? Of course, the risk is that you might find things that you like. Well, we can't have that, so let's ban it of some sort. But wait, you're beyond. You're too old. You're too mature. You have too many resources to be banned. So take a look. There's consequences. That's the consequences of where we need to have a sense of ethic, of right and wrong. And again, it's situationally, it seems to be, if some ethics are situational, others are common sense. I like being with you today. I think it's been helpful. The show's been interesting today. Lotus Eaters amongst you, well, rock on, rock on. Jerry Garcia continues to live in the airwaves and in the minds of a lot of people. I hope that you are well in committing those acts of random Masonic kindness. But more important, I hope that you're coming to terms with yourself in a good way, that you're discovering not as, oh my goodness, you know, not that kind of thing, but without the judgment. Don't be so darn judgy. Where you're just examining the truth. And if the truth is such a horrible thing, step back and rethink it. Where in the world did that come from? Yeah. Masonic Effects, we're on the verge of an outbreak of bling, putting bling onto the world just to be able to identify each other. I am chuffed, to say the least, about the amount of support that is coming from listeners across Canada and the United States. I am so, it's validating. To all you men and women who tune this in, it's validating. Come back and see us. We'll be back in a week's time with more history and poetry. If we have any effect on you, let me believe that we're drawing your we have a conversation about detail, about looking at the world a little closer. And somehow, let me believe that when you and I disconnect, that idea of detail stays with you. And that as a result, your vocabulary begins to change and you need different ways of describing the world around you. Instead of the seeing tensions and seeing what is not there and being angry, you begin to see the world with a different lens, with an ability to understand the bitter sweetness, understand the pathos, the reality of life around us. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you again soon. Thank you.